from, we can begin by looking at it from an historical point of view and remembering some of the early days of book distribution. I started distributing books in 1971 or 72 in New York City, actually in Port Authority. And at that time we were distributing big Bhagavad Gita books directly by going up to people and shaking their hands, introducing ourselves and presenting the books. It's just the way we, practically speaking, the way we do it now. A very pure approach. And we, at that time, experienced so much satisfaction and reciprocation from the conditioned souls. We actually learned very quickly that not only people were interested, but they were fascinated by Prabhupada's books when we began to really preach about them, that we soon became so enthusiastic that we had a big selection of books that we kept in the lockers of Port Authority, as well as pictures of the temple and deities, prasadam, beads for chanting japa, and all of these we would also introduce if we found somebody very interested.
Right on Sankirtan?
Right on Sankirtan. We would send people away with 10 books and a bead bag and some prasadam and everything all at once. In one fell swoop they would begin. Many of them later became devotees, actually, these people that we were preaching to in those days. We used to distribute books both quickly and efficiently, as we still do now. And then when we would find somebody very receptive, we would spend much longer preaching, and we would try to give them many books and receive, and try to get them to give as big a donation as possible. And in those days, we were, because of the temple situation, we had to actually average something like $10 each for each big book we sold. So we were all still doing a lot of big books every day.
How many were you doing?
Well, I think we were averaging $200 to $300 a day in terms of Lakshmi, so we were definitely doing a few books, you know, 20 to 30 books at least. And then when they lowered the rate to $5 a book, then we started really doing a lot of books. But our emphasis was always on doing distributing books and preaching and making devotees. We saw no difference in distributing the books and making devotees. We really saw them as one and the same thing, that this was the process of making devotees. Of course, we were a little overzealous and thinking, perhaps oversimplifying the process of making devotees. In those days, many devotees came simply on the basis of getting one book and a little association with the devotee. Now, it seems that sometimes it requires more of a cultivation program for people to become convinced to actually move into the temple, simply because the times have changed and there aren't so many young people that are as freewheeling as they were in the 60s and in the early 70s as hippies that had already renounced a lot of material possessions, and was much more easy for them to accept something like this, immediately see the value of it and want to try to move in and try it out, see what it was like. So many people came like that, actually, because they were really burned out in the material world, whereas today, lots of the young people we meet are going to college, they're seriously trying to engage in some career, and then when we preach to them, they become attracted naturally by the books, but they don't necessarily immediately see how they can extricate themselves from their present situation, because they're so involved and they're relatively comfortable. They're not suffering a great deal and they haven't rejected the material education that they're getting and the material standard of working in the material world, which we had done already. So there's, in that sense, there's a difference. So we now have all these follow-up cultivation programs to go along with our book distribution, like the folk program, to gradually make devotees. That's really how I see it, that there's a cultivation program now to back up the book distribution so that these people will gradually become devotees, or at least become involved in ISKCON, in t- tied and linked into ISKCON permanently, more or less, hopefully. Because every contact that we make on Sankirtan from the Sankirtan devotee requires so much surrender and so much dedication and so much energy, actually, to engage that soul who is completely bewildered by modes of ignorance and passion, totally uninterested, pretty much. Most of the people we meet are, I meet at least, are coming from, they're just, they've never been introduced to any kind of spiritual concept, practically speaking. They have no idea whatsoever of any alternative to material consciousness and material fruit of life, which is what they're engaging in. So therefore, when we meet them, book distribution to me is a matter of convincing somebody in a matter of seconds that what you're offering them, this book that you're offering them, is going to give them something completely different than they've ever been offered before. Something totally new that they never had an opportunity to hear about or see before, which is going to give them qualities in their personality, qualities in their characters, in their character, develop their character, qualities in their emotional experience, and qualities in their intellectual experience, and ultimately pure spiritual experiences that they can't achieve in any other way. Now, and I don't present this as so much as a religion, but as a great science, which has been handed down for thousands and thousands of years, and which in this materialistic Western culture is totally unknown. And people become very interested. I find people become very interested when it's presented in this way, because here they are in the midst of their material work, working very, very hard. Most of the people I meet are hard, passionate workers, totally fruitive workers, totally absorbed, working, running to someplace to get back to their job, or running someplace to do something. And they're totally absorbed in simply making money and maintaining their family members and paying their car payments off and their rent off. And they're totally involved, completely. They're so tied up in their situation. It's just like a cocoon. They're in a cocoon. And when they meet a devotee, these days, we have to be so concentrate so hard and be so in tune with that cocoon that they're in. I mean, we have to recognize what it is and see that we have to present these books in such a way that they, for a minute, forget all these entanglements, at least, while they're talking to us. We can so attract them that they can actually forget their mental platform. All these things that are worrying them, that they're completely tied up with. I have this appointment, and this money is going for this, and this money is going for that, and I have to see my psychiatrist in a few minutes, and I haven't got time in the first place, and who the heck are you anyway, and what are your credentials, and what is this you're giving me?
And where do you get the intelligence to actually cut through and actually present Krishna in such a way that they become attracted?
Well, most of it comes from having an intense desire, an eagerness, and enthusiasm. I find that you have to be extremely enthusiastic, because they're extremely enthusiastic for their fruit of activity. This fruit of activity is very, very requires a lot of enthusiasm. These people are performing austerities. They're working very hard. These are the people that we want to reach, actually, because they're a little bit, they're not as bewildered as people that are easier. Sometimes we meet people that are moving a little slower, but they're also going to be slower to read the books and slower to catch on to what the books are saying in most cases, because they're so much under the influence of intoxication and laziness and inertia. You know, they're so much under the influence of ignorance. So most of the people that I meet at the DMVs are very passionate. And I think at the airport that's true too. So I think the younger devotees, the principal difficulty they have is learning how to become intense enough to stop somebody and actually concentrate and clear-headed enough to think of how to engage each individual soul, because everybody's completely different. And you can't do this mechanically at all. You have to actually analyze this person and see in a few seconds, what is his situation? Where is he coming from? What are the modes of nature that are influencing him even? And how am I going to... Then you immediately know, instinctively, through experience and through Krishna's reveals to you, how you can deal with such a person to attract them. And a bodhisattva attracts a person in so many different ways. He'll try to attract him to the book, because the first thing you do is you hand him the book. Here, sir, we're passing on 500 today. This is a special a book that we're giving out to people in the neighborhood today. I'd like to have you take a look at it. But then if the guy says, listen, I'm not into religion, I'm not into meditation, I'm not at all interested in anything that has to do, this book is not for me, then you have to start on some other platform. Well, what do you do, sir? Do you have a family? Or what, you know, you have to start from some other angle completely until he's totally forgotten about the fact that he's still holding the book. And then you come back to the book. There are so many different things that you have to do with each individual person. But I find that it doesn't have anything to do with how disinterested they are, or how much in Maya they are, or how far away from Krishna consciousness they are, because practically 99% of the people I talk to at the DMVs and at the airport are so far away, they couldn't be any farther away if they tried. You know, they couldn't be more forgetful of Krishna if they wanted to be. It's incredible.
How,
you know what I mean? They're just really out of it, totally. So it's really the devotee's intense desire and enthusiasm. Like that enthusiasm, first of all, it stops them. They can't figure out where you're coming from, what you're trying to do to them. I mean, you're totally... Yes. And they can see, they can recognize on some level, the soul recognizes some purity. I think the soul responds to the purity of the devotee. And the devotee may not talk about Krishna right away or God right away. It depends very much on the situation. So it isn't purity in the sense that you're preaching directly, necessarily, but simply that your friendliness isn't, it has no motivation. It's not, you're not hustling them for anything. And if in fact you aren't being fruitive and thinking of them in terms of a number, either a number of Lakshmi points or a number of book points, then that really gets communicated to them on some level.
How do you keep your mind fixed on that platform of not being fruitive for either Lakshmi or mount books?
Because engaging the soul, just stopping each person, is so absorbing and so fascinating. Each individual soul is so different. And to engage them is such a challenge. It's an incredible challenge. It's like, I'm not saying it's difficult. Anybody can learn to do it. I'm convinced anybody can learn this art. Prabhupada said that. But it is very difficult because it requires total concentration and total commitment. You have to be absorbed in wanting the soul to be engaged. Your mind can't be anywhere else. You can't be thinking of anything else you can't hold back anything from Krishna. You have to really give yourself to this person. Let's really give yourself to this soul. And in the process of doing that, you're also giving yourself to Krishna. You're praying to Krishna on behalf of this soul. That somehow or other they can... It's not even a conscious prayer for me, because it's such a jugga just to talk to the person. It takes so much energy and so much concentration to try to strike up some kind of an interesting conversation that will either interest them from their intellectual point of view or joke with them if they're... everybody's different. So you have to be able to be like a chameleon and change your personality according to not your personality, but your externally, you change your approach. I do anyway. I either joke, or I may be very grave and serious, or I may be lorded over some people. Some people I'll be extremely humble with, and just simply glorify them and praise them. One man I remember came out of the DMV with his friend, and he didn't tell me, but I could just have a sense about him that he had a very proud feeling, a very puffed up feeling that he was very advanced spiritually. So immediately I approached him and I said something about how I could tell by his eyes that he was very deep and thoughtful, and I wanted to meet him, and I just introduced myself. And I said, I really want to give you one of these books because I can see that you're a person that really is very deeply involved in spiritual cultivation of knowledge. And he said, how could you tell? Right away he said, you're right. Now, we people like us can tell each other. We can always tell each other. We went on like this, you know. And he did all the talking. He preached to me. And then he gave me $5 for the book. And he left. He was a Christian, you know, a complete Christian. But because he was so pleased with how I had presented myself to him and encouraged in his own commitment to spiritual life, I said a few things about the book, but I didn't say very much. Just that it's a great spiritual classic, and he knew he would enjoy it. He was convinced he would really appreciate it. But had I approached him in a different way, he never would have stopped for me. So that's what I'm saying. It's a very intuitive thing, and that intuition comes from Krishna. And only Krishna can give that cleverness, and it takes a lot of practice of going out day after day and just doing it. And a lot of times you're going to get a lot of no's because you're not going to be right on. And you can understand those no's, not that Krishna isn't causing those no's to happen, but that you should think yourself that I'm still not giving everything to Krishna. I'm still not really praying hard enough. I'm not surrendering hard enough, and I'm not desiring hard enough. Because ultimately you'll realize that anyone can be made to take a book. It's not that we can do it, but you'll at least have that realization that anyone can take one of these books and give something if they have the money, or at least appreciate the book on some level. If the devotee is sufficiently fired up and determined. I don't mean determined in a passionate, pushy way at all. I mean in a very sensitive way, that he's determined to concentrate his whole self on this person for a few minutes, this soul that he's meeting, and trying to grasp what this soul is going through, what kind of a false ego this soul has, what's preventing him from...
That comes from constant practice, doesn't it?
Comes from practice, and it comes from Krishna.
Right.
See, Krishna rewards us with this intelligence and this realization, yes, and intuition, but you definitely have
to
practice.
Get it unless you go out and
try.
No,
that you have to actually undergo. You have to show Krishna, demonstrate to Krishna that you want it, and that requires a lot of austerity on the part of the devotee. It's an austere service in that sense. The taste is so deep when you begin to taste it, and gradually you do. You may get a few glimpses, and then you get more and more, and then gradually it'll become steadier and steadier if you remain steady in your attempt to get it. That's what I was telling you girls this morning. But you have to really go for it. And it takes years and years and years to get a steady, solid taste of this for most devotees. It's certainly taken me years. Some devotees are very fortunate and very purified to begin with, and they very quickly get a steady taste. But that's rare. That's very rare. Most of us have to undergo this austerity of approaching a conditioned soul one after another, after another, after another, day after day after day, and learning how to pray. It's not that we pray spontaneously. We have to force ourselves to pray on behalf of the conditioned soul. Well, it's not that we concentrate spontaneously. Our mind is just like we're chanting japa. Our mind goes everywhere, but on the conditioned soul and what we're supposed to be doing out there, trying to engage them. It's such a complete service, and it requires so much concentration. I was giving some examples this morning. It's just like a mother who has a child that's like about 2 years old, which I think is one of the hardest ages they get to where they're just all over the place and they're not toilet trained or anything, and the mother is just constantly with the child, and the child can't control its senses for a second, and you can't discipline it, you can't yell at it and just tell it what to do. You have to be so clever to actually engage the child in a positive way and get it to do what you want it to do without having a temper tantrum. It's almost like that in book distribution. You have to actually, they have no control over their senses at all. You can tell them looking all over the place, and you have to keep their mind fixed on you and what you're saying to them. And you, so that means you have to be completely sensitive to their response to you at every second. It isn't that you just preach something you've read out of the books or something you've heard in the Srimad Bhagavatam class. You have yourself have to be totally sensitive to how they're responding to you at every second, so that you can be so quick to change in the slightest, you know, to change your approach, to change your mood, to change your words themselves, to change your emotional, what you're putting out emotionally. All these very subtle things affect them. And this comes from practice, and from Krishna empowers us in this way to do these things so that we can actually hold their attention. The whole thing is to hold their attention. They have no control over it. They have absolutely no control. It's just like they can't. It's just like a small child that can't control when they go to the bathroom. It's almost that, like that. You know, that's what I think of when I talk to these people. And so we have to help them. So we help them by lording it over them in various ways, you know, but in such a way that they don't realize or feel that pressure. That's why it requires so much sensitivity. It's an art. It's a great art. Prabhupada said it is. Because we can't make them feel that we're pushing them or in any way controlling them, but factually we are, for their own good, because they otherwise they're totally on a suicide path. You could say that we're like paramedics arriving on the scene of a very serious accident where somebody is just about to die, and we know the exact medicine to administer, and we know exactly how to do it, and we just have to be sufficiently detached and determined to step in at the right moment and administer the proper medicine in the right way. We actually have the knowledge. We have everything. We have the expertise comes. That we have to have the desire to do it, you know. We want to save their life. We want to do it. We can't be casual or lazy or spaced out. We have to really have an intense desire to get this experience. And this is the way that you get a very, very intense experience of the presence of Lord Chaitanya with you and Krishna and your spiritual master. It's unavoidable. You experience their presence intimately there on Sankirtan with you, because you are constantly feeling them empowering you, and you're feeling their presence, and you're also praying to them, and you're seeing how they're reciprocating with you, and you're and the things that these conditioned souls, the changes that conditioned souls are going through in a matter of seconds is so amazing. It's mystical. It's entirely mystical. It has nothing to do with any potency we have on our own. We can see that immediately. So therefore, it increases our faith and our realization of Krishna unlimitedly, the more we get, the deeper we get into it. I remember the first time I distributed a lot of books was, I had that experience in a very deep way. It was a payday weekend, and it was fogged in New Jersey, in the New Jersey airport. And somehow or other, I was sent there because I wasn't, they didn't think I could, maybe I could do as big as somebody else, so I was sent to that one. And it turned out that it got fogged in and all the military men were there all day. And so I was wandering around with my Krishna books in a state of, for a neophyte devotee, some kind of ecstasy. I mean, it was actually, I wasn't feeling any kind of pride or ambition to distribute a lot of books, actually. What I was feeling was awe at Krishna's potency. I was simply awed by how Krishna could arrange, not the fact that it was fogged in and these flights couldn't leave or anything, but that the books were going out like anything. I think I distributed 70 books that day, which was the biggest that we'd ever done in New York at that time. And It just went on all day long. Of course, in a similar situation today, we probably distribute 500 books. Do you think it looks like blue jean material? You have to talk loud because it's all the way over here. I'm going to have to laugh.
So, Mother Gloria, this might be very helpful for all of us to hear more or less a summary of how you learned to become internally absorbed in Sankirtan, because certainly, as Srila Rameshwar has explained, if one's just on the passionate platform, then it's like a shooting star, it never lasts. And so everyone's thinking, well, this is very important, this internal absorption. If we want to do Sankirtan for the rest of our life, you know, one day a week or whatever it is, then certainly we have to learn how to be internally absorbed and have a consciousness that, you know, we'll want to do Sankirtan, we'll understand it, and we'll you have some realization to keep us going, because otherwise we won't want to go on and we won't want to actually perform it in the proper way, and we'll have no desire. So I think it would be really nice if you could summarize your in your Krishna conscious life as a Sankirtan devotee, how you learned this.
Well, I've learned a lot from being around other devotees who were internally absorbed, but I think the thing that for me has been the most the deepest experience for me was when, as I learned to take more and more shelter of Sankirtan and actually see it as a shelter, as a place where I was experiencing my relationship with Krishna, because I was praying to Krishna during the whole time, or as much of the time as I could remember to pray, that I was out there, that it became more and more clear to me that whenever I was on Sankirtan, trying to distribute books and preach about Krishna to people, I was safe, in the sense that I was with Krishna. I could experience that I was doing the best I could to serve Krishna at that point. And then another thing that I began to experience gradually more and more, which has been made Sankirtan very enlivening to me and very much more of a deep experience and something that I relish a lot, is that I began to feel a real exchange with the conditioned souls more and more. The more I found I was praying and actually trying to become externally just steady, the more Krishna allowed me to concentrate, I guess, and experience a real rapport with the conditioned souls. You know, the more you let go of your material personality and your material conditioning, and you try to really see where somebody's coming from, and you just are fully into concentrating on engaging them, you can't help relishing it, because it's so, the whole experience is so sweet. You actually experience some love from the conditioned soul. It's quite incredible. They're so appreciative. The soul itself, whether they don't completely realize what's happened to them, but you can see what's happening. And you're feeling love for the conditioned soul. And you're realizing that this is coming from Krishna. It's not something that's just originating from you, but it's also you're feeling it too. It's like two things are happening simultaneously. That you're realizing this is Krishna's mercy that they're getting. It's not that you're giving them the mercy independently of Krishna, but that you're being allowed to witness it and experience this love. And that's what I experience when I distribute books, and that's why it's so relishable that I would always want to go out and do it if I had the opportunity. And that's why I feel it's so important that everyone gets the opportunity to learn how to do it until they reach the point where they're actually on this platform of being able to relish exchanging with the conditioned souls in a very clean way, in a way in which there isn't sense gratification for themselves involved. And that's what I was trying to tell the girls this morning, that when you preach to people and cultivate people in a slower way, and all these other backup programs that we have for cultivating people to make them eventually devotees, and then when they become bhaktins, we preach to them, and when they're in the ashram, we train them. All these different steps along the way. There's a lot of room for sense gratification to be there as well, in the sense that we can get a lot of reciprocation from them. And that reciprocation can feed our false ego, can make us feel very good about ourselves. Somebody respects us, somebody thinks we're great, somebody thinks we have all the answers, somebody looks up to us like a guru. All these things are there, and it's very hard to avoid being affected by them unless one is very, very pure and has a lot of insight into this whole process. And I think, for myself at least, by doing a lot of book distribution and engaging a lot of souls very quickly, where there was no time to really get into it to the point where, you know, you're getting that much of a reciprocation. You get a lot of reciprocation, but it's very quick. And then you're very detached because you go on to the next person and you don't see that person again, usually. So, in that sense, it's wonderful training because it teaches you how to be very clear-headed and how to engage people and in such a way that you don't involve yourself in any sense gratification with them at the same time. It's very pure spiritual activity. So that then when you do some longer term or more of a slow cultivation or training type of program with another devotee or with somebody they're making into a devotee, you already know all the pitfalls. You've seen it very clearly, and you don't want it. You're not attracted to it because you're seeing things in a transcendental way. You're not looking for something external. You've actually already been trained to see in a very internal way that you're looking how that soul is progressing, and that's all you want to see. And you want to make, and you want to continue doing whatever you can, in any way you can, to encourage each soul that you come into contact with to make advancement and to become more and more attached to the process and to becoming firmer and firmer in their faith. And actually, that's what we're doing when we're meeting all these conditioned souls and distributing books or just in any way engaging them. We're making them more firm in their faith, even on the most primitive level. We're talking atheists all the time, and they're becoming faithful. Oh, in a matter of seconds, by the strength of the devotees' associations. That's how intense the experience is, so intense. That on book distributions, I know, and any book distributor that's done it for years will say the same thing. If you spend a day, 6 hours, 8 hours, concentrating, distributing books, really getting really deep concentration, and you're just fully absorbed in distributing books, when you come home and go to sleep at night, you can literally remember every soul you talk to. It's just like a file card that goes through your mind, and you just are turning over the files, and you remember each person's personality and exactly how you gave them the book and how they forgot all about their material personality and for a minute and became completely attracted to the book and to what you were saying about it and how this was going to change their life. And it's so exciting to see that happen. And that's Lord Chaitanya's potency. And that's when I was beginning to talk about that time when I was doing those 70 books. What I was so stunned by was how this was the first time so many books had been distributed. It was inconceivable to me that so many books could be distributed in one day and that so many people would take books. And I began to realize this could be happening every day if I had enough desire. I had that crystal clear realization. Krishna could do it any day because Krishna is doing it now. And he's Krishna. He's all opulent. This is just a tiny little drop of Krishna's opulence. But I don't have the desire. I just happen to have a desire today because I've been looking forward to this weekend for a long time. We had a big build-up for it. So I was ready for it. You know, I had a lot of strong desire to distribute a lot of books. And Krishna gave me the ideal situation. But then when I really got the chance, I saw that I wasn't doing it, that it was Krishna. And I could see this is how unlimitedly opulent Krishna is and how puny we are and how we could be doing so much service for Krishna if we had more desire. You know, these books could be distributed, but it's by desire. When I say it's not easy, what's not easy is that we're very impure and we're very conditioned and we're very distracted by material things. And it's just a question of becoming determined to go out every day and practice purifying. We have to undergo the process of purification, chanting, following the sadhana, and actually going out and trying to do sankirtan faithfully every day. And then the book distribution, it isn't practical perhaps for most devotees to do that every day. But any kind of sankirtan is going to purify you if you have this consciousness. If you don't have this consciousness, then you won't get the same kind of purification. You're performing some austerity and you're doing some service, but you're not really concentrating on the conditioned soul and how to engage each conditioned soul. And even when you do special events, it's never mechanical, actually. Even though you may say the same line over and over again for 12 hours, 15 hours, I've done that many times. I never feel at all mechanical. I feel each individual spirit soul is completely individual. And that's how I get so many people to give me $5 donations and $10 donations, because they see that I'm really focusing on them. They feel that. And you get through to the soul, and the soul will surrender to you. You know, if you do it mechanically, then you'll get some result, but you won't get the same result. But that, you learn that, or at least I learned it from doing book distribution. It's harder to learn it from just the collecting directly, because it's such a temptation to be mechanical and be lazy. But when you're doing book distribution, you can't be mechanical and lazy. There's this is too difficult. You can't do it. Nobody will listen to you. Nobody will even stop for you. But if you concentrate, the person that would have walked right past you if you were trying to be mechanical may stop, be very interested, and give you $10 or $20 for a book. You never know. There's so many people that are just waiting for these books. But they have to be approached by a sincere, enthusiastic devotee. And there's no other way that's going to give them that opportunity to get one of Prabhupada's books. Really. Even if they're handed a free book, it's not going to be the same as somebody really giving them a deep experience of what this book is and how wonderful they are and what the connection between them and this book is. You have to actually show them some connection between them and the book you're giving them. And it's different in every single case. Completely different. So amazing. You know, there's no two people that you have to connect them with Prabhupada's book, and you have to show them in their false ego level how they're going to be able to use it. And in the same time, simultaneously, on the level of the soul, you have to give them your love, and they have to experience that. I mean, if it's really there, they'll experience it, and they'll reciprocate too. They can't help themselves. They'll trust you, and they'll even say after it's over, I never trusted anybody like this before in my life. I mean, every book distributor has experienced this. I never... Come on in. What was I saying?
Well, I was just wondering, how do you feel or how do you pray on those days when, you know, how the devotees say every word is not a song and every step is not a dance? But it seems like Krishna's got special plans to teach you.
Well, I've always heard, you know, some devotees are firm believers that on different days the modes are different, meaning that sometimes everybody's in the mode of passion and ignorance and it's much heavier, and on some days everybody says no. And so I have never believed that philosophy. I've never found it in any of Prabhupada's books. I think it's always the same wherever you go. It's basically always the same, but that we undergo a lot of changes in our Krishna consciousness. We go up and down a lot. So our degree of faith is what the problem is. And when we become really fixed in our faith, we're invincible, nothing can stop us. A devotee who is completely convinced cannot be stopped. There is no way, a sankirtan devotee. How we've all experienced this. We've gone into the most impossible situations, and every other devotee may do terribly, and one devotee will come out with, great results. Just to show, Krishna does that, just to show everybody else that it wasn't the modes. It wasn't, you know, it's not some fluke of nature that everybody's saying no today, but it's just that we can collectively get into Maya too. Maya is contagious, especially if we talk a lot about it, you know. That's what I've always felt. I mean, I'm just as bad as everybody else. I get into it too, but I honestly believe, and I've never seen in any of Prabhupada's books where, it, you know, one day is more in the mode of ignorance than another day, you know, at the airport as opposed to the deal, you know what I mean? I mean, I just never believed that philosophy. But you do hear it from a lot of Sankirtan devotees. I think it's always the same. The opportunities are the same. You can always meet Krishna can send anybody. And certainly he's going to engage you if you're really ready. He's certainly going to engage you. I mean, why wouldn't he? It doesn't make sense. It's illogical. Krishna's not going to, he's not going to use you if you're trying to be pure, if you're trying to be free from every impediment, if you're out there and you're enthusiastic and determined. Well, if he doesn't engage you as much as he wanted to be engaged, then you have to look deep in your heart and see, what is it in my heart that Krishna is trying to make me see? He's holding out the results. He's not allowing me to do as much as I'd like to do. So there must be something in my heart that he wants me to see. Perhaps I'm still fruitive, although I thought I was a pure devotee. Maybe I have a little attachment to honor and fame and distinction still. Maybe he wants to save me from becoming overly proud and overly puffed up. Perhaps I'm a little too puffed up. You know, you have to really get into it in your heart with yourself and try to see what it is, what your motivation has been, and what, and then you can easily see why Krishna is doing what he's doing once you understand what, where you're at. The problem is that we are so deceived. We're deceptive and we deceive ourselves. You know, we're by nature very deceptive and cheating. And we cheat ourselves, and we cheat everybody else, but we also cheat ourselves because we have no idea where we're really at. We're so in illusion about ourselves. Our false ego is so much out of touch with where we're really at, where we, the servant, the eternal servant of Krishna, is really at, the soul. I'm sorry. So, I mean, I've seen it. It's a deep thing. You just have to work on it every day when you go out on Sankirtan, when you chant your japa, when you're engaging in every devotional activity. It's something you're constantly working on, trying to see yourself accurately and be honest with yourself. And with the help, actually the association of devotees is invaluable, because with the help of God brothers and God sisters and the deep friendships that one forms, one has a kind of mirror to get some feedback, because a true friend, a real friend, will actually tell you when you're not quite right on, or when perhaps there's something that you're missing, that you're not seeing correctly, or your vision is a little distorted. And then collectively, when we get together, we can see how we all are seeing things a little bit differently, but when we get together and we talk a little bit, we see how the vision becomes very crystal clear, you know. And that's Prabhupada's vision. That's actually the correct vision. Don't you think so? So this association of devotees who have similar desires, serious devotees who have similar desires to become pure devotees, to become serious, sincere, eternal preachers for this Krishna consciousness movement, those are the devotees we want to cultivate relationships with, and those are the devotees we want to associate with and learn to get guidance from and give guidance as we become a little advanced. But we always want to get guidance. Any devotee, any sincere devotee, always wants to be reprimanded and guided and corrected and shown in any way possible how he's not digging deep enough into his heart and getting all the weeds out, because we want to get every last weed out so we can really be, not only be in pure instruments and actually do unlimited service in terms of Sankirtan and preaching, but we can be qualified to be with Krishna, which is what Krishna really wants. But even beyond the preaching, Krishna wants us to become pure devotees, to love him. Beyond the preaching. Preaching is the process he's giving us to develop love for him. That's how I see it. The preaching is actually the process. It's his ingenious arrangement, Lord Chaitanya's ingenious arrangement to purify us, and in the process we're purifying others, and they're going to purify others, and so on and so on and so on. But ultimately what the goal is to love Krishna. And then Krishna can play with us and dance with us and have fun with us. Right now we're just a drag, you know. He doesn't even be, you know, he can't even be around us very much in one sense. He's always with us in our hearts, but he can't really, I mean, we can't reciprocate that much with him. You know, we're so slow. We're so dull, covered over. But this Sankirtan, once Srila Ramaswara wrote me a wonderful letter, he said, this Sankirtan is very sportive activity. Now he was referring literally to the fact that it requires physical energy to do it. But I took it also in a very spiritual way that he was referring to the fact that it's very sportive with Krishna. It's a sportive activity with Krishna. It's definitely a very, you could say it's the highest Vaishnava sport. I've always thought of it like that, you know. It's a special kind of service that you can do for Krishna, which is definitely, I mean, it's the greatest sport there is. Going out on Sankirtan, engaging the conditioned souls. I mean, how anybody could...
Devotees feel that Sankirtan, because someone's